Minor Prophets, which means it is near the end of the Old Testament. Near the end of the Old Testament. Go to Isaiah. Go to Isaiah and turn right. Just keep turning right. You'll find the book of Habakkuk. It is an interesting book. Habakkuk, the essence of the book of Habakkuk, it's just three chapters. Habakkuk is a 7th century prophet. He is prophesying to the tribe of Judah. Judah at this time is very wicked. Habakkuk has been obeying the Lord and just crying out to the people to repent and to turn back. And the book is interesting in the fact that it is an honest conversation. The book of Habakkuk is an honest conversation with God. It's an honest conversation of a man who does not understand what God is doing. Is there anybody that can identify this morning? I mean, do I have anybody in the house that's ever been there? God, I do not understand what you're doing. I see what you're doing, but I don't understand what you're doing. And this is an honest conversation from a man like that. You know what that means is if you've ever wondered, if you ever said, God, I do not understand what you're doing, you're in good company. Because one of the prophets himself said the same thing. He said, God, I just don't understand it. I see it. It doesn't make sense. I don't understand what you are doing. In fact, it's interesting. In verses, and I'm not going to read the whole chapter. I just want to give you a synopsis. Chapter 1, verse 1 through verse 11, Habakkuk is saying just that. He's saying, God, I just do not understand what you are doing. In fact, look at verse 11 there. He says, how long, O Lord, must I call for help and you do not listen? Now, is there anybody here but me this morning to be honest enough to say, I've been there. Right? I've been there. I've been at that place, right? Right where Habakkuk says he is. How long, O Lord, do I call and you do not listen? In other words, what Habakkuk is saying in that first few verses, Ronnie, is he is saying, God, I don't understand why you don't move. I don't understand why you don't do something. I don't understand why you don't change things. I don't understand why you don't change the circumstance or situation. I don't understand what you're doing. God then replies to Habakkuk. I love this because it's just honest conversation between God and his prophet, a man who was his prophet. God responds and says, Habakkuk, I've heard your cry. I've seen what's going on. And this goes from the last half of chapter 1 all the way through chapter 2. And God says, Habakkuk, I have seen. I am in control. I am in charge. And here's what I'm going to do. And he lays out the plan how he's going to respond. And in this particular case, he's actually going to use another nation, who is actually the nation of Babylon, who is actually worse off than Judah, to judge Judah. And that's not where I'm going this morning with this, but I have to set this up for where I am going to make any sense at all. He's going to use this this nation that's worse than Judah to judge Judah. And so Habakkuk comes back and he says, the first thing he says is, God, I don't understand why you don't move. And then when God tells him how he's going to move, he comes back and he says, God, I don't understand why you're moving like you're moving. Right? Now, I don't know about you, but that's just real. That's just a real conversation between God and man. That's just real. That it's a real conversation that says, God, I don't understand why you don't move. And then when God moves, God, I don't understand why you move like you move. Now, have any of you ever been there? You ever been at that place where, God, I don't know why you don't move, and then God, when you do move, it doesn't make sense to me why you move like you move. And in the midst of that, Habakkuk says something. Near the end of that, he says something that actually has been repeated in the New Testament time and time and time again. And Habakkuk says this. He says, but the just shall live by faith. You understand what he's saying? God, I don't understand why you don't move. And God, when you do move, it doesn't make sense to me why you move like you move. But this I know, O God, the just shall live by faith. That God, you've been a you've been a faithful God to me. You've been you have moved in my behalf. You've never forgotten me. You've always been on the scene. Your history with me, God, is a good history. Your history with me is that you've always been faithful. Your history with me is that you have always come through. And here's what I know. Even though I don't understand why you don't move, and when you do move, I don't understand why you move like you move. This I know. The just shall live by faith. I'm not going to live by my sight. I'm not going to live by what I hear. I'm not going to live by what I see or what I feel. I'm not going to live by the circumstance I'm in or the situation I'm in. I'm going to live by faith in you because, God, you never change. You never change. That is a message that is preached over and over and over. In fact, it's preached by the Apostle Paul several times in the New Testament. He repeats Habakkuk several times. The most famous of one is in Romans, where he says, "The just shall live by faith." And you know that sermon well. What is interesting in today's modern society is that much of modern society has made that message a rather weak message. The just shall live by faith. They've made it a very weak message, because modern preachers and modern movements have made the saying, "The just shall live by faith," they've made it a very shallow saying that says, things are going to get better soon, and I'll hang on till they do. You understand what I'm saying this morning? They've taken Habakkuk's "the just shall live by faith" and Paul's "the just shall live by faith," and they made it something rather weak that says, it's going to get better soon. The situation's going to change soon. Things, God, you're going to intervene soon. You're going to change things soon. You're going to move soon, and I'll hang on till then. The just shall live by faith. And I'm going to hang on till then. I'm going to hang on until it changes. Hang on till it moves. And what's interesting is that is a very shallow, shallow meaning of that. Because what if it doesn't change soon? What if it doesn't move quickly? What if it continues to move in a way that doesn't seem to make sense to you and doesn't seem to add up? And Habakkuk knew that, and Habakkuk realized that. And Habakkuk actually closes out the first chapter. He's talking with God, saying, "God, I don't understand why you don't move." The second chapter, he's saying, "God, when you do move, I don't understand why you move like you do." But then he comes to the conclusion, "But Lord, this I know, the just shall live by faith." And then the third chapter is actually a song. It's a song that talks about how he is going to live. And he ends this song, and this is my whole message this morning. I want us to center in right here. This is my whole message this morning. Habakkuk, the third chapter, the 17th, 18th, and 19th verses. And I want you to listen to it this morning. "Though the fig tree does not bud, and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crops fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my Savior. The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of deer. He enables me to go on the heights." You see what Habakkuk is saying this morning? Habakkuk's not saying, "It'll get better soon and I'm going to hang on till it does." Habakkuk's not saying our modern prosperity way of thinking of things, where it's going to change in a hurry, it's going to change soon, things are going to turn my way soon, and I'm going to hang on till it's God. Oh, God's got a blessing in store for you. And indeed, listen, do I believe that story? Do I believe that? Absolutely, I do believe that. But I believe before you get there, you got to get here. See, before Habakkuk could get there, he had to get here. Habakkuk had to get to a place where he said, "Though the fig tree does not bud, oh Lord, I'm not waiting on the fig tree to bud. I'm going to rejoice in you. I'm not waiting on something to change, something to be different. I'm going to rejoice in you, God. I'm not waiting for the day that things turn my way and I get the promotion or the job comes through or the perfect man or woman comes into my life. No, Lord, though the fig tree does not bud, yet I will rejoice in the God of my salvation." He said, "Though there are no grapes on the vine, You understand what he's saying there. Lord, though the crops fail me, though they don't come through, even if it is a bad season, even if it is a bad second season, even if it is a bad third season, yet I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Though the olive crop fails and produces no food. You understand what he's saying here? He's saying, God, you've been faithful to me. You've come through for me. You've moved on my behalf time and time again. And my hope, my faith, my confidence is not in it's going to change soon and I can hang on till then. It is that you are hanging on to me. You are for me. You have favored me. You are in my corner and on my side. And because you are, God, if the crops fail and the fig tree fails and the grapevines fail and there's no produce in the field, yet I will rejoice in the Lord of my salvation. He says, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. This is not a message that you'll hear on primetime Christian television. They won't set up a conference to preach this. But what Habakkuk is actually saying, you understand what he's saying? What Habakkuk is actually saying is, though I see nothing, and though I gain nothing, and though I have nothing, and though I prosper nothing, yet I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Though nothing changes, I'll still rejoice in you. Though I'm not able to understand any more than I was able to understand, I'll still rejoice in you. Though I cannot see anything different, I'll still rejoice in you, for you are the God of my salvation. What he's saying is, because of God is who he is, I will rejoice even though I do not understand his ways. Even though I do not understand what he's doing. And as hard as we may, I think sometimes we have a difficult time connecting with what that actually looks like. What that actually feels like in our lives. So I want to share with you this morning someone who I think better than anyone I personally know connected with that idea. And I'm hoping in sharing that with you that it will connect with you. One of my heroes ever since I was just barely young enough to read, one of my heroes was Corrie Ten Boom. How many of you have ever read The Hiding Place? Many of you have. You know the story and you know it well. Corrie Ten Boom was born in Harlem, Holland. She hid individuals from the Nazis, mostly Jews. She also hid individuals of the Dutch resistance. And she would hide them. Her father had gotten up in her room and had built a false wall. And that false wall, behind that wall, it was just a small closet almost behind that false wall. They would hide Jews who were trying to escape the Nazis, and they would hide those of the Nazi resistance. Between 1943 and 1944, she hid some 800 Jews, some 800 lives. Knowing all along that her own life was in danger, knowing all along that if the Nazis found out, she would go where they went. She would get the same fate that they had. And some 800 Jews and members of the Dutch resistance, she hid. But February 8th of 1944, a friend betrayed her. And the Nazis came and tore up the house. They arrested that day. They arrested her and her sister Betsy. If you remember the story well, they arrested her father, her brother, another sister, and Peter, a nephew, and arrested them all. And the Gestapo systematically searched the house. Never did find the hiding place. There were six or seven people, if I'm not mistaken, that were in the hiding place when they came, and they never found it. Corrie and her family never gave up that they were there, not even on the threat of prison. Caspar, who was 84 years old at the time, he died just 10 days. Her father died just 10 days in prison. When asked, why did you not just tell them where the Jews were so that you could stay out of this place? He said, it would be an honor to give my life for God's ancient people. And so he did. Corey's nephew was never heard from again, never came back from the work camps. Her brother contracted TB in prison and suffered with it the rest of his life. Corey and Betsy were sent to Ravensbrück. Ravensbrück was one of the most horrible concentration camps there were, especially the women's section. And Corey and Betsy spent nearly 2 years in that prison. And those of you who know the story know that Betsy, who was ill-health when they went to prison, she died under the cruel care of a Nazi guard in that prison. Corey was able to survive that, and on April 15th, she was freed and spent the last 30 years of her life talking about God and forgiveness and His faithfulness. His faithfulness? How do you do that? I tell you how you do that. Though the figs do not bud, and though there's no grapes on the vine, and though there are no crops in the field, and no sheep or cattle in the pen, and though there are no food in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord, the God of my salvation. That's how you do that. That's how you do that. Let me just share just a thought or two. And I do this and because she says it so much better than I. She says, Ravensbrück. They're standing in line ready to go into Ravensbrück. She said, Ravensbrück. She said, the whisper from the crowd, because up to this point they didn't know where they were going, and the whisper from the crowd just echoed back Ravensbrück further and further, and it struck fear into the heart of all of them like a whisper, like a curse word. It went back through the lines. This was the notorious camp, concentration camp, that we had heard about. Said the squat concrete building where the smoke disappeared in the bright sunlight. No, how could it be? How could Betsy and I, stumbling down the hill, how could we be here with the Bible, the one Bible we had been able to save, bumping between my shoulder blades, tied on my back? That's God's news. It was to this world that He had spoken good news. At last, we halted. She goes on to say, and we sat there for hours and began to realize all over the ground, everywhere, in everything that was there, lice everywhere. The straw was literally alive with them. While clutching our blankets and our pillowcases, we stood up so the lice wouldn't get to us. But at last, out of fatigue, we spread our blankets on the ground, squirming with lice. And over the dark night, I hear Betsy singing, "The night is dark, and I am far from home, but lead me, O God, lead me." How do you do that? I'll tell you how you do that. Though the fig tree does not bud, and though no grapes on the vine, and though the olive crops fail, and the fields produce no fruit, and though there's no sheep or cattle in the stalls or the pens, yet I will rejoice in my God, the Lord of my salvation. That's how you do that. This is no shallow, the just shall live by faith is no shallow thing. This is a deep thing, my friend. It is not, oh, things are going to get better and I can hang on until it does. My faith rests in the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And He has never failed me. And He never will. She goes on. Upon realizing that upon realizing that they had three things. They had a sweater, they had vitamins, and they had their Bible. And Betsy was in poor health, and she desperately needed the sweater and the vitamins. And they desperately needed the Bible. And upon going about to go in, she realized that they had reached a second point where they were going to strip search them and take everything from them. In the middle of that, she looks at Betsy, and Betsy looks at her in horror. And the only thing that just popped into their mind, they turned to a guard and said, "Where's the bathroom?" And without even searching them or anything, they looked at them and just motioned that way toward the bathroom. And both of them took off and ran toward the bathroom. And she says, they get in there, and she says, "Betsy, we cannot give up your sweater. We need that sweater." She began to, as talking to Betsy, she begins to pray, "God, Betsy must have her vitamins, and she must have her sweater, and this book, please, God, this book. She said to the man, please, where are the toilets? And he said, use the drain holes. They looked around and they realized that laying over in the corner was a pile of clothes where X's had been cut out of them, and red X's or another color material had been sewn in, so they would know that they were prisons. And she looked, and beside the clothes was she said, and I'm quoting here, "one wooden benches crawling with cockroaches." She says, "but to me, the furniture seemed like the furniture of heaven." She said, "because I said to Betsy, take the sweater off, give me the vitamins, give me the Bible. And we hid the Bible and the vitamins and the sweater behind those benches, knowing that just in a few minutes, we would be herded into that room. And we would not be poor, but we would be rich." Rich in this new evidence of God's care for us, even in Ravensbrook. How do you do that, my friend? You do that because even there, when there's fig does not bud, and the grapes give no fruit, and the olive crops fail, and the sheep's fail, and the cattle's fail, yet I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. Few of us can identify with this kind of faith, and yet all of us have been in places where we needed this kind of faith. And I'm saying to you this morning, this idea that Habakkuk said, "the just shall live by faith," it's not some weak thing to be able to have the car you want, or the house you want, or the job you want, or the career you want, or the money you want. Oh my goodness, my friend, this goes so far beyond that. This is about your heart belonging to Him. About your heart belonging to Him. Notice what another thing or two, and I know this is not a normal sermon. In fact, by the way, this violates everything they taught me about preaching in school. You don't get up and read from a book. Listen what she says. She says, "as the rest of the world grew stranger," this was later on, "as the rest of the world grew stranger, one thing became increasingly clear for us, and that was the reason that we were here." She said, "while others should suffer, we were not shown. But as for us, our mornings until lights out were spent from roll call, were spent huddled in a corner with our Bible." And she said, and the circle began to grow greater and greater. And here's what she said, "and the blacker the night grew around us, the brighter and the truer and the more faithful the word of God came to us." She says, "now I know what it means that you who shall separate us from the love of God. Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us." How do you do that? How do you do that? "Though the figs give no figs, the grapes give no wine, the sheep and the cattle give no offspring, and the fields give no food, yet I will rejoice. Betsy said, read it, more than conquerors. It was not a wish. It was a fact. We knew it. We experienced it minute by minute. Poor, hated, hungry. No, we were alive. Even living in Ravensbrook, that day we realized that the glory of God becomes better and better, truth upon truth, glory upon glory. The just shall live by faith. Not some weak, anemic faith that doesn't seem to carry us through, but a faith that is indeed faithful. She writes of once, when they were going down to be examined, and she says, on this particular morning, it was shivering in the corridor. And she said, and they had stripped us. She said, we were gaunt. We were starved. We looked horrible. We were ashamed, as if there were anything to still be ashamed about. And we were stripped naked, all of us standing in a line out in the cold. And she says this. She says, but that morning, a Bible verse leapt into my heart. That he hung naked on the cross. She says, I had not known. I had not thought of that. She said, the paintings, the carvings, the crucifixion show him with a scrapper of cloth, but he was not covered. He was naked. She says, at that time, it was a Friday morning, and on another Friday morning, 2,000 years before, they had stripped him naked, and he had hung there for me. And as she says, as Betsy and I were in the line, she said, I leaned forward, and I said, Betsy, they stripped him too. And she says, and Betsy turned and looked at me and said, oh, Corey, I never thanked him for that. How do you do that? Yet I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. I'm not satisfied with living with an anemic faith. I'm not satisfied with living with some prosperity message that is being preached around the world today. The just shall live by faith, but oh, it is so much stronger, so much nearer, so much deeper. It brings so much more life. It is so much more powerful. She talks about going to a new room, a new dorm. And I'm not reading these whole things. I'm just reading you a small portion. She said that night they took us and they brought us to a new dorm. And she said that new dorm, as they pushed them in there and they put their clothes down, they said they leaped to their feet immediately. She said, what is it? What is it? Fleas. Fleas everywhere. And she said, I, Corey, could not take it anymore. And I was about to scream and about to shout at the guards. And Betsy rushed to me and she said, Corey, God's given us the answer. Don't you remember? Corey said, what do you mean? What do you mean? He's given us the answer to this. Read that again. Read that part again that you read this morning. And she began to read, comfort the frightened. Help the weak. Be patient for everyone. See that no one of you repays evil for evil, but always seek to do good, every one of you. It seemed to be written especially for Ravensbrook. Betsy says, go on, Betsy. Go on, Corey. That's not all. Oh, yes. To one another and to all, rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God concerning you. Betsy says, that's it, Corey. That's his answer. And Corey says, you're not serious. She says, yes. Corey, what do we have to be thankful for here that we are together, Corey? That we are alive, Corey. Thank him for that. Oh, yes, I thank him that we're together. I thank him that we are alive. What else? that I still have my sweater, Corey. That I still have my sweater. Thank him for that, Corey. Oh, yes, I thank him that I still have my sweater. That I still have my vitamins, Corey. Thank him. Yes, I thank him that I still have my vitamins. And what about that book that you're holding there, Corey? What about that book, the Bible? Oh, yes, I thank him for the Bible that we still have. She says, Betsy looks at me and says, and? Corey says, yes, and that we are here in these cramped quarters with all of these people that need to hear the gospel of Jesus. Yes, Corey, thank him for that, and Corey does. She looks at her and says, and, Corey, thank him for the fleas. And Corey says, Betsy, I cannot thank him for the fleas. Yes, Betsy, yes, Corey, thank him even for the fleas. And she says, and so we stood on the bunks and we gave thanks for the fleas. But she adds this, but I was sure Betsy was wrong this time. How do you do that? Though the grapes give no wine, though the olives give no fruit, though the fields give no food, though the animals give no offspring, yet I will rejoice in my Lord, in the God of my salvation. She writes of another time when Corey was sick and, I'm sorry, Betsy was sick and carried to the infirmary. She says, in this dismal, suffering, stinking place, we had to go back there time and time again because Betsy's condition was getting worse. She said, I was repelled by the room, but Betsy was not. She said, it seems to me that Betsy was just getting worse and worse, and she was forced to work. She was forced to stand in line. She was forced to wait on her food, and the food was never enough. And here we were in this infirmary again. And she says, and I'm yearning for God to do something, almost angry. And she says, Betsy takes me and looks at me and says, Corey, come to yourself. Some of the people laying here are on the threshold of heaven, and that's why we are here. How do you do that? Yet I will rejoice. Yet I will rejoice. One last comment here before I close. She says, one particular day, one evening, Betsy comes and she rushes in and she finds her. She says, Betsy has this most self-pleased look on her face. She says, I can tell that Betsy is pleased with herself. And she says, Corey, I found out why. The new dorm that they sent us to, and we were free to worship, and we were free to read the Bible, and we were free for everybody in that room was free. Unlike the other dorm, the dorm that they sent us to, we were free in there, and we could worship and praise. And she talks about one time how that when they began to praise and they began to thank God, how beautiful it was to hear them, the ladies praising in Dutch and German and in French and in all languages, began to hear them praise. She says, I found out, Corey, why we are free. Corey says, I can tell that you are extraordinarily pleased with yourself. She says, I found out. She said, you found out what? I found out why they leave us alone in our dorm. She said, this morning we were sitting and we were knitting socks, and one of the other ladies had a question about a particular sock size and went to the door and asked the guard to come in and to help them settle the matter. And she says, and the guard refused. She wouldn't come in because she said, that place is crawling with fleas.
It was the fleas. That's why they were free to worship. That's why they were free to praise Him. That's why they were free to have Bible study. It's why they were free, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds came to know Christ because of the fleas. How do you do that? Though the fig tree does not bud, and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crops fails, and the fields produce no fruit, though there is no sheep in the pen, and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord my God. That's how you do that. That's how you do that. She talks in here of the night, the day. When it was nearly time for Betsy to go, she talks of going around to the infirmary with her and carrying her to the infirmary. And she knew this would be one of Betsy's last days unless they were freed, unless someone done something. And they let Betsy in, but they would not let her in. And she goes around to the side room. She looks through and looks, peers, and peers in the window and cannot see her. And she goes back around to the door, and finally they let her in, and she kneels by Betsy's side, realizing that these are Betsy's last days. And just all of it is running over and over and over in her mind. And she says, Betsy looks at me and says, Corey, here is what I have learned. There is no pit so deep that He is not deeper still. There is no pit so deep that He is not deeper still. How do you do that? Though the fig trees do not bloom, the grapes do not give fruit. Though the sheep and the cattle do not produce offspring, and though the fields give no food, yet I will rejoice in the God of the Lord my God. Then it goes on to say, the sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like deer's feet. Look at this. He enables me to go up on the heights. There it is. There it is, Virginia. There it is, Chris. How do you do this? Yet I will rejoice. And in that rejoicing, He allows, makes my feet as hinds' feet, where I climb even from the pit, because there is no pit so deep that He is not deeper still. I want the praise team to come back this morning. This has been a completely different morning, a completely different message. I know that you are not necessarily used to hearing a message along these lines and in this way, but I got to tell you this morning, for weeks now, I've watched as family after family after family go through stuff, and I have seen, just as I would have been, I've seen individuals struggle with this, and I have also seen individuals come through and say, though there's no figs on the trees and no grapes on the vines and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice. And as they do, I've watched them climb with hinds feet, deer's feet, Miss Hattie, to the high places in God. And I want to say to you this morning, He is faithful still. He is faithful still. He is faithful still. I look around just in the folks that are here, and Paul and Brittany, He is faithful, isn't He? He's faithful. He's faithful.
Now looking back there, Ron, some of you should hear Ron's testimony sometime. He's faithful, isn't he, Ron? Yeah, he's faithful. He's faithful. We watched his family after family after family. And oh my goodness, those that rejoice in him anyways. Those that rejoice in him anyways. I'm not talking about ignoring the situation. Habakkuk didn't more than the situation. He said, I know there's no crops in the field. I know there's no olives. Yet I will rejoice. Yet I will rejoice. And there are others still. You're still in the throes of it, still in the midst of it. If you need God to just take this and make it, Lord, I want that reality in my life, what I'm facing and what I'm looking at and what's ahead of me and what I've been through, what's unknown on the horizon. I need that sense of yet I will rejoice in my life. Significant is that God do something in your life. Till I see you again, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift his countenance up upon you and give you peace. Go in the blessings of the Lord. I love you. God bless you.